please step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 385. I am Lisa Sheps. I am joined, as usual, with my co-hosts, Miss Nicole Shiro and Mr. Nick Mayo, Nick Squared. They didn't say anything. You're listening to us on KOOP Hornsby Austin 91.7 FM, streaming live at koop.org. Stay with us.
Hurry, hurry, and step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh, yeah.
Now the guy is calling me a wussy. Wish I could grab him by the lapels and tell him I'll be there to pick up all the pieces. I'll be there no matter what they say. Cut him loose and don't let him near your nieces. Then come on back to me, 'cause you'll be ready for a better way. Cut Medicare.
It is Wednesday, November 2nd, 2016. It is November, folks. On the show today, we are privileged to have Mr. Zell Miller III in the Vortex's production of Ballad Eats the Budget. Also, later on in the show, we're going to talk to one of the illusionists from Broadway Across America. And, of course, we will have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, go Cubbies, and Houston, Texas, go Texans. We'll be right back.
And I'll be there with policies aplenty. Yes, I'll be there rising above the fray. You'll see me one fine day in 2020. At least I hope you will. I hope there's still a better way.
Okay.
What is that?
What is that?
You didn't know about that?
No.
Hold on. Do you recognize the voice?
NPH.
It is definitely NPH.
In good voice, I must say.
In very good voice. That was written by, I just forgot the name.
Robert Lopez?
Robert Lopez and his wife, Christian Anderson Lopez.
The Frozen Folks.
The Frozen Folks. And that was written for a little show called This American Life. And one of the reasons why I love that this was on This American Life, which is the number one podcast out there, is this goes on to what we were saying the other day about
Broadway.
How Hamilton has made Broadway accessible and interesting to the masses, and there it is out there. So this song I don't know what it's called.
It was for Paul Ryan. It was Ode to Paul Ryan Ryan.
Let me finish and I'll explain. The actual NPH was Paul Ryan.
Oh.
So it's all about when Trump doesn't win, or when Trump wins, the Republican Party is going to beg Paul Ryan to come back.
Oh, Kamahara.
So, I know. That's a whole nother kerfuffle.
That's really good. So let's check in with Nick Squared. How are you guys doing?
We're here.
Great. And I'm going to check right back in with you. Normally we wait to introduce our guests, but I can't.
I know. I'm excited.
Zell Miller III is in the house. How you doing, Zell?
I'm doing awesome. Thank you.
Awesome. You are, and please don't get this around. Tell people that you are our favorite guest. Always.
I appreciate that. Thank you. That will be my secret.
It's a secret.
So, Nick Mayo, you're going to New York.
I am.
What shows are you going to see when you're there?
You know, I hate to admit it, it's a quick trip. I'm not seeing any shows, but I'm hanging out with a bunch of really cool off-Broadway actors. So,
I'm going
to
take this moment.
I should give him the recorder to do some little interviews while he's up there.
Let's
get some goods.
Let's take a moment to talk about, because this was on my list of to do. Fair Wage on Stage.
Those are the people who I'm going to spend the weekend with.
So the contract is up this Sunday.
Yes.
And it's an interesting thing. I wanted to talk about it. I heard an interview, and maybe this is one of the people that's going to be there.
Nick Westrade, who gave the interview on Playbill.
Yeah. Well, this was on Broadway, one of the podcasts I listened to, Today on Broadway. And just listening to him and everything that's going on. But one of the things that I haven't heard in this fight, and I'm only making an assumption because it's the same problem we have here in Austin, Texas, is that when I produce a show here in Austin, Texas, I can't skimp on my designers. I can't skimp on rental of the theater. Mm-hmm. I am forced to pay full price for absolutely everything else.
Including,
but for some reason, I feel it's okay to pay the actors less than a living wage.
And that's unacceptable. And that's the very thing. And there's so many things like that are coming up. For instance, just last week, Michael Kors and his husband gave a very generous, or 2 weeks ago, very generous donation of $1.3 million
generous.
To the Roundabout Theater Company, one of the most wealthy nonprofit theaters in New York, a $1.3 million gift to build a VIP patrons lounge instead of paying their actors a fair wage. So,
there's an argument on both sides to that. So as somebody that runs a nonprofit and runs a theater, I see the other side of that, because that then in turn is a function to make more money. Whereas, so
it's a double-edged sword.
It's an ethics thing of like, I, as a theater company, value the storytellers. And if the storytellers... So listen, sooner or later, it's going to come to the fact where no one can make a living as an off-Broadway actor.
Right.
And then we'll only tell the stories of the wealthy. And well,
interesting thing that in the interview with Nick, and he brought up an interesting fact. So he talked about he's been on working off-Broadway about 20, 30 years, this person. Is it the same person?
Different guy.
Different person. So he's talking about the minimum equity wage 20, 30 years ago, which was about $250 a week. Mm-hmm. Your monthly rental at that time was about $250, which is about right. So the equity pay scale has gone up in with inflation, but housing has gone up exponentially.
And so transportation.
Transportation in New York is pretty...
It's a big thing.
It hasn't been raised that much.
Yeah. Housing is the big
overall,
thing in New York.
But the housing is...
But it hasn't... The wages across the board, everybody, hasn't gone up with how much it costs to live. So that living wage is really important. And I just want to acknowledge that Zell Miller's been here.
I was like shaking his head.
Nodding his head, which Zell doesn't work on the radio.
You can speak. It's okay.
Absolutely.
So I think 100%. We all agree. But it's such a difficult thing coming from the producing side. But what upsets me is that there are certain things that I'm not allowed to skimp on. And unfortunately, the people that get the short end of the stick is... the actors. And equity has never been a strong enough union to say, you know what, screw you. You got to pay our actors a living wage.
Well, there's a strong enough movement going on right now and conversations and negotiations within the union to stop this, to stop it immediately. And I'm very proud to go up and join my community and celebrate with them the hard work that they've done.
Well, give them offstage and on the air's kudos.
I will. Thank you.
You can Jersey fist pump for me.
they live in New York. Don't give them a Jersey fist pump.
I think you can for me.
No,
that's acceptable.
No,
absolutely.
No, I'd say no. So we had a couple of openings. One, I think I'm going to start with Liaison d'Angereux.
Yes.
Did y'all read any of the reviews? It was split.
It
was either really bad or really good.
Thank you. Yeah. And I was like, well, did they see the same show?
It's interesting.
Because it really felt like that. It wasn't, you know, sometimes you get mixed reviews, but this seemed so...
This was divergent.
Polar opposite that I was like, whoa.
So we're going to concentrate on Ben Brantley's review because, boy, I'll tell you what, I stopped... I have word after word after word with this one.
Oh, you
it's
had
like,
to stop.
It's
with
a
the
French
words.
Title, so he feels like he can use words that nobody would ever know.
Precaution.
But this is Dangerous Liaisons, as we Texans like to call it. In this case, starred Janet McTeer and Liev Schreiber. And this was done, when was it done in the 80s? or 90s with Alan Rickman and Lindsay Duncan, who
87 did 87 or 91. I'm
going to tell you exactly. I'm going to say you were good. 87, very good.
Nicole,
she rocks the party.
Useless information in my head.
So it opened last Sunday at the booth. So here's the opening paragraph of Ben Brantley. In the high-stakes sport of extreme stage acting, Janet McTeer and Liev Schreiber are champion cliff divers. Give them an emotional precipice to jump from, and they'll soar through the air and stick the landing. And he went on to just rip them to shreds.
That's hilarious.
He loves to kiss so, and hit.
In comparing them with their predecessors, the late Alan Rickman and Lindsay Duncan.
Why would you do that? Because, I mean, I love Lee, but why would you compare those two? They're like apples and oranges.
Because they said he said those two slithered into the leading roles with avidity of sleek, sexy foxes in a hen house. And that McTeer and Schreiber came across as magnificent bulls who strayed into a Limoges China shop. By the way, one of the words I had was avidity.
Avidity.
Why didn't he just say avidness?
I don't know. But I'm looking at your paper. You have it all edited up like you're like writing a novel.
You're a college professor.
Like, I wish the viewers could see the circles and lines and underline. It's like, I know, but I've never seen...
I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll go.
I have never seen so many markings on
I'm going on
one
Facebook Live right now to show people, just so that you do it. So if you're listening live, you can go to Facebook Live. But I think they actually hold these videos and you can see it. So I'm on Facebook Live right now. Here's the thing she's talking about.
Turn it over. It's not just one page.
Okay. Well, it's all over the place. So it's that. Anyway, okay. So you can see that, and that's it.
Here today on Show and Tell with Lisa, so Nick Quick, and Zell Miller the Third.
That's Zell Miller the Third. This is directed by Josie Rourke, and this is a Don Moore Warehouse show.
Yeah,
you know I love me some Don Moore Warehouse.
I know.
I love anything in a warehouse.
I would still see it. What I've seen of clips of it, I don't know.
Yeah.
I love. Yeah. I have to tell you though, I actually love this show. I
did you see it in the?
Back with the Alan Rickman? Mm-hmm. No.
It's been done so many times.
Though? I love it.
I like the movie.
Yeah.
Oh, the movie. Yeah, well. Yeah, how come no one compared them to John Malkovich and Glenn Close, huh?
I don't know.
You know?
So here's come another word I have to say. I'm just going to run through these words. Desuetude.
The desire to...
I'll give it to you in context.
The desire to know.
No, talking about the set. When first seen, Tom Scott's Grand Salon has a look of cobwebbed desuetude.
Des what? With a
desuetude.
W?
Desuetude. Desuetude. Yeah, that's what I thought. Destitute.
Destitude with someone with a speech
impediment. Desuetude.
Yeah, it's like Elmer Fudd. Desuetude.
I'm living in desperation.
It's no longer used. And here's another one.
Did he know that desuetude is no longer used?
Oh! No!
How about this word?
Politesse. Spell that,
Though the Marquis de Marteau is widely perceived as the epitome of kindly politesse to whom people unwisely turn in distress.
Politeness.
Yes.
Yeah. So why didn't they just say that?
Politeness. Yeah. Ben.
And then how about this one? Aperçu. It's
a person.
A perçu.
A person.
The unceasing cleverness in conversation wears thin, and the exchange of polished a perçu often sounds like ersatz Oscar Wilde. It's a hasty glance.
Look. Yeah.
So, I don't get it. So anyway, he did not like this. Other reviewers in the Associated Press, Mark Kennedy said, McTeer is luminous and sharp, playing her Marquise coolly indeed, but with an inner fire burning. So he liked it. Mm. The Marilyn Stasio for Variety said the imposing Janet McTeer and a sturdy, if curiously miscast, Liev Schreiber are the principal players in this stylish Don Mar Warehouse production.
Hmm.
Yeah, so... Joe Diaminowitz.
Joey D.
called it.
Call him Joey D.
Called it limp.
Ooh. Oh.
So the other thing,
was not a fan.
The other thing that opened that Miss Ann Ciccolella went to go see.
Yes,
would be the falsettos.
Yes.
Oh my God!
I know.
Andrew Reynolds and Christian Borle. And what's her name?
Stephanie J. Block. They've all been popping in and out on the Today Show for the past few weeks, and I've been like,
it's one of my favorite shows.
It's a beautiful show.
Beautiful
and
show.
Did you know that it started? So I read an article where it started as a William Finn did as a one person show, and it was somebody. It didn't start it as a public. Is this a public?
I don't know.
Would you like me to find out?
Yeah, no. Well,
did you read that article in the New York Times?
Yes.
So, funny little trivia. Uh-huh. My husband and I were sitting reading the New York Times, and he says, "Babe, there's a picture of me in the New York Times marching with the falsettos banner from 1993.
That's so funny. Is he in the banner?
Was marching in the parade.
Well, we'll have to get that and link it in the show notes.
Shout out to Michael Hartman.
So anyway, Mr. Charles Isherwood would call this an exhilarating, devastating revival of the musical falsettos. It feels as fresh and startling as it did back in 1992.
Mm. The interesting thing about this show,
when you talk about the world now and the world in 1992, when same-sex families were not
mainstream,
mm-hmm. that AIDS was a death knell. It was mm-hmm. a death sentence. And that was quite a chance back in 1992. Mm-hmm. And listeners of the show will know that falsettos is actually two one-acts, March of the Falsettos in Falsetto Land, mm-hmm. that talks about a man who leaves his wife for another man. And they share a child. Who has a bar mitzvah?
Jason.
Anybody that's Jewish in theater, it's such a rarity.
And William Finn's, it's such a beautiful, beautiful show. I was very curious as to how it would translate now with
all
the younger theater-going audience
coming well.
To see it. And I'm so happy to hear that it's getting critical acclaim, and I hope people go and see it.
Well, interesting, it was developed.
That's exactly how I was like, whoa, they like it now. But yeah.
I'm glad.
It was developed, if my facts are right, and we have a slew of fact checkers working on the show.
It was
developed as a one-person show. The public or whoever came in and worked with him to bring it in. It was a tremendous flop. Mm. Then they brought in James Lapine mm-hmm. to come in and work with him, and that's when it flipped. Yep. And that's when he turned it into falsettos, March of the Falsettos.
And originally it was such an amazing cast. Michael Rupert, Carolee Carmello, Heather McRae, Chip Zine. Oh my goodness! It's just okay.
That's
the picture, because I saw the picture of they had. There's the whole thing about the falsettos cast now and then. Mm-hmm. Is that the same article?
Yeah, same article.
Yeah. The 10-year-old boy, Jason, character Jason, is played by Anthony Rosenthal, and he's been getting some really great nods.
Playwright's Horizons.
But he's getting great nods because it is a huge role for, you know, a lot of times you go to see pieces mm-hmm. and you have a young actor and you go, oh, they're so cute. This the role carries the show.
I was like, yeah.
So good for
him.
Yeah,
you can't have a... Half.
Huge. So this is a show that I'll be going to see when I go to New York in December if I can get tickets.
Definitely.
Oh, I love it. There was an article, I think it was a Hollywood Reporter, that said that the cast members were saying that they hear the audience crying every single night. Ooh. They can physically hear the audience crying every night. Yeah, but that's awesome.
Mm-hmm. It is awesome. So have y'all been following this whole Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet of 1892?
Come on, it has the Grobes in it. Of course I'm following it.
Are you following the whole controversy around Ars Nova?
Yes,
I saw it at Ars Nova.
Did you?
Oh, yeah.
So this has been fodder for Michael Riedel's column for quite a while, and it made it into the Times. So I think we talked about it on this show. So the producers, and I forgot
Howard
the name.
Kagan.
Howard Kagan and his wife produced this, and they did...
I do dates, he does producers.
There you go.
That's how I had a career.
Ars Nova, a small nonprofit, that this is their first thing that they've ever brought, has gone to Broadway... Their deal was that they had it above the title Ars Nova production of a 1980 Pierre Comet 1982.
The show with the Grobes. It's a long title.
And they refused to give them that credit. And it it went back and forth. So this isn't a money thing. This is simply a credit thing, which is huge in our business.
Isn't it your contract, though?
And yes, and very huge for a small nonprofit
Absolutely.
That doesn't have any money. So this is a big, this would have been that, this will be that thing that takes them to the point where they can fundraise to the point of maybe paying their actors more when they do off-Broadway shows.
Exactly.
And they were just holding tight. And they did, they even went so far as to schedule the recording of the cast album on the day of the Ars Nova fundraiser.
Wow.
So it has been resolved, like yesterday or the day before it finally got resolved. And the producers said, we will go ahead and give you the credit if you drop your lawsuit. But sort of what upsets me was the very loud silence of Josh Groban, this whole thing.
The Grobes was crazy silent. I'm like, the Grobes not going to say anything?
And the Grobes had the power to do
something. The Grobes had a lot of power to do something. Yeah. I was a little surprised by it, too.
The Grobes knows who writes the paycheck, though. And so he's playing a little role of diplomacy within there. I will say,
he's singing to both of them, and you know what he's singing? You raise me up. And he's just
playing
both
sides. What
a
time not to have the video camera on. That was,
wrap that, I mean, to kind of go back to our initial conversation, there are so many great producers who are fighting for the proper dues being put where they are. There's for every light, there's a shadow. And that situation was not appealing.
No, not
and
at
this
all.
Made some
and
there was good a, national
was a lose,
like primetime
lose for everybody. That's what I don't understand.
And there are some very happy litigious producers.
Yeah.
And I think that might have been the case in here.
Maybe. Well, yeah. So one of the articles I read or listened to is it talked about how the producers didn't sort of enjoyed being the bad guy, being the evil
twirling
villain.
That mustache. Yeah,
thank you. That's the international sign for twirling the mustache, and I was doing it.
Well, I say the costume fits in that case.
That's true. Did y'all hear this article about the Met, the closing of the... And I think, Nicole,
no.
You put this on
The
on
Ashes?
There. The Ashes at the
oh
Met.
So
I forgot
I
the show.
Like,
they
what?
Didn't. They had to cancel Act 2.
Guillaume Tell, right? Yeah.
Because somebody... Well, go ahead and tell them, Nicole. You put this in here.
A man was attending the afternoon performance, and he went over the top from the balcony and sprinkled his friend's ashes into the theater.
Into the orchestra.
Into the orchestra, and they had to cancel the show by the second act. Well, I laughed at the sentence, quote, "The man initially fled the opera house in Lincoln Center, but police later said they knew who he was and were reaching out to him." Authorities also noted that disposing of ashes in an opera house may violate the city health code. But police do not see, quote, any criminal intent here. I'm like, okay, I want my ashes spread in the city, and it is a health code. You have to do it on the DL, but really? In the orchestra, in the
now,
middle?
First
like,
of all, kudos to him.
Yeah, I love New Yorkers.
At first I thought, well, why did you stop the performance? But then I realized they stopped the performance because at that point it was a white powder.
It was a white powder. They didn't know what it was. Yeah.
Didn't know what it was.
Wow.
So I thought stopping the show
was
sort of
it was a really long intermission and everybody's like, well, what's going on?
But also if you're going to do it at the opera. What a great, I love that New Yorker. Whoever he is, I want to know.
Can I tell you, I'm surprised that my father didn't
probably
request
someone in your
something.
Family,
it
Nicole.
Probably is because this is such a wackadoodle disposing of ashes.
We're running out of town. I just want to really quickly...
Running out of town? See
we're running out of time. I just want to really quickly say that that I read that there's going to be a live version of Bye Bye Birdie, and I forgot which television network is doing it, starring one J-Lo.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that.
I don't know how I feel about it, but I love... Bye Bye Birdie, come on.
Bye Bye Birdie.
NBC, it's the 27 holiday. They announced the 2017 holiday musical. Yeah. We haven't even gotten through Hairspray, and they're already on the Bye Bye Birdie.
Looking forward to that. Speaking of Hairspray, they're going to be on
the TV?
They're
the boob tube.
They're going to be on the TV.
They're going to be on the telly.
They're going to be in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade along with Holiday Inn and some other things that they just announced.
You beat me to the performances during the parade this year. Look at you.
Yeah,
razzle dazzle me this year.
It was just brought in today. And then the last thing I want to talk... Oh, Purple...
Purple Rain? We can talk about Purple Rain too.
Purple is closing.
They're remastering a new album.
January 21st.
Yeah. Right. So... and we think it's because maybe Cynthia Erivo has got something else going on. Because I don't think... It hasn't been doing really good box office, but she's... when she took, and I didn't realize this, she took the week off after the Tonys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And their box office took a dive. That's an unfortunate time to give her time off.
And those producers doing such a beautiful job of giving their cast yep. and the audience enough time to come and see it. It's yep. a great thing. That's yep. an example of wonderful integrity around that.
Absolutely. Let me tell you, that music is so powerful. That show is, man. All right. Yeah. I can it's still, good. I'm still in the theater.
All right. So down. Here, this was going to be the day of the very last quiz because I'm no longer going to do them because we just keep repeating them. But I don't have time. So this is going to be
the birthday party.
Is it on there?
No.
It's no. always an answer.
What the butler saw is. But there it is. That's
ripped,
the last
ripped
one.
Ripped it up.
So the last thing I will say before we take a break is that Tammy Grimes died a couple of days ago. And Tammy Grimes she got her start doing The Unsinkable Molly Brown.
You love that show, too.
Well, I love that show. I love Tammy Grimes. Right? She had a pretty good career. She did not have a great career, but she was widely known and respected. So we're going to go out listening to a little bit of Tammy Grimes in Unsinkable Molly Brown, talking about Denver.
Beautiful people of Denver, beautiful people.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP Hornsby Austin. You've got me, Lisa Sheps, with Nick Squared.
Nick Squared!
That's Nicole Shiro and Nick Mayo. We're getting ready to talk to Zell Miller III, but before we do, there was one thing I wanted to talk about with Tammy Grimes that I found interesting. This I did not know. So she won a Tony for playing Unsinkable Molly Brown.
Okay.
But what do you suppose the Tony was for? Which Tony Award did she win? Take a guess.
Was it supporting actress?
What do you think, Nick Mayo?
I mean, I would think it would be best actress, but
it seems like a trick question.
It is, and you're exactly right. It was best supporting or best featured actress.
Huh. Featured.
Because at the time, she was unknown, so her name was not above the title, and that was how you got that.
Billing is important.
It's all back to billing.
Isn't that amazing?
Billing.
She did win another Tony for something else. I don't remember what it was. Couldn't have been too
that
important.
That performance was smashing.
So before we went on the air, I asked Zell Miller to choose a number between 1 and 2 and 47. What did you say, Zell?
4.
Yeah, but what did you say first?
Oh, I said
28. And I said no. Choose another one. Because I think we've had 28.
Yes.
We did, but you still go up to like 34 or something.
No,
like,
I mean, I think we've had 28 chosen lately.
Oh.
So anyway, we're going to see what 3 is. You ready?
Okay. I'm ready.
Hey, how you doing? I'm Jay Harrison G with Kinky Boots First National Tour playing Lola, and you're listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP Hornsby Austin.
We may need to do it one more time. My levels weren't ready for that.
I think you blew us away. And I was like eating the mic.
Yeah. Hysterical.
Oh, that Jay Harrison G.
Kinky Boots just opened choice. In Australia.
Isn't that phenomenal?
Did it, Mike?
It did. Cindy was there on the carpet.
I love that. I put a shrimp on the barbie when I went to see it. So we're here to talk to Zell Miller III, who is the creator and director of the show that's happening at the Vortex right now, which is not Little Women, which is what I have in front of me right now. I thought I printed out something about the show, but your show is called Ballot Eats the Bullet.
Yes.
And tell us about it. It looks fantastic.
It's amazing. It's Ballot Eats the Bullet. It is in the vein of a choreo poem, like for color girls who consider suicide when a rainbow is enough. Mm-hmm. It's six.
Which you just did not too long ago.
I did
not.
Yes, ma'am.
You
absolutely.
Got to come
absolutely.
On with
absolutely.
That.
Thank you so
I got
much.
Excited too.
But this piece is, I wanted to. Bonnie asked me. The Vortex asked me to do something that would be political right around this time. And for me, the most political statement anybody can make is being a black woman in America. And so with the help of some contributing writers, Ebony Stewart, Anne Marie Winter, and Lisa B. Thompson, created a script. And it's really highlighting the beauty, the power, and the trauma that black women deal with on a daily basis.
Hmm. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And what I found really great was I heard your interview with Michael Lee.
Yeah.
And I just loved how, and I forgot the woman that was
Kara.
Karen who
Kara Blay.
Kara, who just said how important it was that you didn't presume to have the voice of a black woman.
Absolutely.
Which we see a lot.
Yes. Like, we do see that happen a lot.
We see a lot of people, you know, white people co-opting people of color, other people, you know, co-opting other other cultures and things like that.
Absolutely.
And I just love that we give a nod to you, because I think, you know, you probably have a good understanding.
Sure.
But not at I'm your, not, a, not, yeah, in no, your
absolutely.
DNA.
And right. So having, you know, been raised by a black woman and an amazing dad, I have to say that, because in these times and days, people don't come from two parents' homes anymore.
Yeah, and people of color.
Yeah, exactly. So, I'm lucky enough to have, was raised by two parents. But also, I would not be the artist that I am if it wasn't for Lori Carlos, who was my mentor. And who pulled me to the side a long time ago and really pushed me to be the artist that I am. And so when I was writing this script, I stopped midway because I'm like, what am I doing? Like, why am I trying to, be, you know, tell stories for black women?
Did you already start it? Yeah, I was like, whoa.
So I'm like, hey, Ma, like, this is not working. And she's like, baby, you're a writer. You know black women. Get out of your way and just tell the stories. So that's what I did.
Hmm. So I just want to tell folks.
Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And if you go on to vortexrep.org,
yes.
There's a wonderful promo.
Yes. Yes.
Beautiful, beautiful promo showing these great women. And this, did you directed it?
I did direct it, yes.
Staging looks
thank you so
wonderful.
Much. Absolutely.
Really, it really makes me want to see it.
I really did get excited when I saw you coming in today.
Is it a group of three women?
It's six women.
Six women.
It's Mackenzie Flakes, Sade Jones, who also does choreography. I do movement. Sade does choreography. It is Val Tolbert, Brianna King, Kara Blay, and Chelsea Manasseri, who, you know.
Chelsea
ridiculous.
Rocks the party.
Absolutely, yeah, really absolutely.
And she looks great in that
She's
video.
Amazing. Yeah. And so I bring in pieces. The original thing was I was halfway through the script, but I wanted to stop. So I invited them to my house. I was like, let's sit down. Let me read it. Let you read it. And let's have a conversation about it. So after they read it, you know, they were like, I was like, okay, just give it to me. Like, hit me. Like, am I wrong? And they were like, no, keep going. And so there would be moments in rehearsal where I would just stop and go, does that sound right? Does that feel right? Is that okay with you? You know, and really checking in with them to make sure that we were going on the right path. And so, you know, just being really open to them. Cause again, there's six black women and I'm not. So
it sounds like they had a great influence on the piece.
Yeah.
That you guys were really who's inspiring who in that circle.
Absolutely.
Exactly. Right?
Absolutely.
Who's inspiring the work? Cool is moment? The work inspiring the actress? The actress is inspiring the work. That's the dream collaboration.
Absolutely. Exactly. Absolutely.
So tell us about the title. So if I look at the title, Ballot Eats the Bullet,
uh-huh.
And in today's day and age, and certainly even the graphic,
yeah.
Is about voting. So is this a referendum on the election process, on this particular election, or none of the above?
It is in small part. We have a piece that you really should see that is about Hillary and Donald Trump. It ends the first act. I can't even begin to tell you what it is, but you should just go see it. Because anyway, but yeah, the graphic was created by my friend Ted Rutherford of Vanilla.
It's a great graphic.
And he's amazing. And again, Ted brought in the first part of the graphic to me. He's like, hey, dude, and he's a white guy. He's like, man, I'm not a black woman. I don't want to be disrespectful with this. So we looked at it together. I took a picture of it. I took it back to rehearsal, showed them this is where we're going with it. They gave suggestions, and then we went back. But in terms of the title itself, it's based off a Malcolm X quote. He has a really famous speech called Ballot Versus the Bullet. And uh-huh. He also has a quote where he says, the most unprotected person in America is the black woman.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of pushed me in to the creating the piece, and also Zora Neale Hurston's, well, I paraphrase her quote, where she says, Negro women are the mule of the earth. And so I wanted to, so with that, those to be the guiding light of where I was going with this piece and where we wanted to shape it. What was really important to me was really highlighting joy, because a lot of times you get stories about black women and it's just, woe is me, I'm so sad, I'm beat down, and I don't never rise up. And so I wanted to highlight that joy in there. So you do hear them laughing, and there's really funny moments in the piece. That was really important to me.
And that, I think that's a really good point. I think so many times that when we hear about a disenfranchised group of people, no matter what it is, you really hear just the negatives.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And indeed, those are heartbreaking and very, very important. But on the flip side of that, there's a huge joy in that.
Absolutely.
And if you don't hear the stories of joy, you don't get what's really going on.
Absolutely.
If you only see the pain, you're like, yeah, okay. Yeah. If you don't see the inspiration behind the other half, Yeah,
when I did 100%. When did this journey, this curiosity into the black female, other than being raised by one, being mm-hmm. birthed by one, when did this come to you? When did you say, like, it's more than just my head, my Absolutely. Heart, I've got to write it? When did that start?
That's a great question, and it started when I was 17 years old, and I saw For Colored Girls at Capital City Playhouse. And it blew my mind.
It just changed
and shifted everything. And I wanted to be a woman. I'm like, oh, I want to be in that. Like, there's got to be a role that I can take on.
I hear you roar, Zell.
No, but I love that piece.
Absolutely.
I mean, it does have that effect. All those series of monologues. Yep. Somebody walked off with
Absolutely.
All, you know,
like, and the way it's laid out, the way the script is laid out, like, there's no punctuation. It slashes. It's like, I just, the whole thing just rocked everything. Everything's in lowercase, and which is what I do now. I still, you know, I'm sure I make my actresses crazy and my amazing stage manager, Lindsay, because I don't use punctuation in my scripts, and everything's in lowercase letters.
Listen, if it's good enough for E. Cumming, it's good enough for Zell Miller.
I was about to say, Holland Taylor writes the same way, too. So,
absolutely.
Man, I love that. I love that. And you're continuing the inspiration. Yes. You were inspired by that piece, and you'll inspire someone else.
Absolutely. And at the end of the day, I have an 8-year-old, about to be 9-year-old daughter, and I want, you know, her to be able to pick up something, you know, trying to find books for both my son, who's 17, and my daughter, who's 8. It's just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And so it was a little bit easier finding books with black people on the cover for him. But, for black girls, man, it's absolutely bearing. Yeah. And I wanted to leave something that, you know, she could pick up and dig into. So
you're open now.
We are open.
And you plan just through this Sunday, this
just
Saturday?
Just through this Saturday.
This Saturday.
Yes.
Well, so we have this weekend to come and see it. Where can folks go to get more information?
They can go to vortexrep.org. And they can get tickets there or any other questions and, you know, check out the, like you said, they can check out
that
the promo.
Cool little promo video.
Absolutely.
Exactly. So Zell Miller III, thank you so much for coming back on Offstage on Air.
Absolutely.
I hope you'll stick around and join us backstage if you have time.
I'm going to try.
We'll see what happens.
Absolutely.
If you have time, we'll spend a little bit of time with you. We have you alone, so we can really dig in.
We can just grill you.
There you go. So that was Zell Miller III. He was here talking about The Ballot Eats the Bullet that's happened at the Vortex through this Saturday. For more information, vortexrep.com. And to hear that beautiful piece of music that is played behind the video, you can just stay tuned.
My heart has been a chessboard.
Awesome sauce. And that piece of music is so beautiful, and it works so well with that that promo. And so, Zell, who put that promo together for you?
That's a great question. It was done by the Vortex. I think the young man who did it, his name is Jose. And I don't know. It's Bonnie. Bonnie Cullen would have all that information.
It's excellent.
Well, yes,
so,
absolutely.
Awesome. VortexRep.org. So here locally, the only thing this has been sitting in my inbox for a while, is I want to go, UT's doing Little Women, the musical. I want to see that so bad. It's crazy.
it's actually not bad.
Have you seen it?
I went to a whole bunch of it isn't even open yet. I've been to workshops of it when it was being written.
Well, but it's
ago.
Not open. It's open
I've seen
tonight.
Workshops.
Oh, a production of
workshops.
It. Yeah. I thought you were saying you saw this production and it's really good.
So because I was like, Little Women the musical, and I was like, and I got invited to a workshop of it, and I was like, yeah, I'm gonna go to that. And I was
Oh no, I love the music. We've actually talked about the show here. Anyway, the previews start tonight, opening performance tomorrow night. More information, texasperformingarts.org. Is there anything you guys want to talk about before we jump into Today in Theater History?
No, I didn't prepare because I thought we were only doing Today in
Theater History. Yeah, so, but
you
when you write the show, you can just do what you want.
You bamboozled.
Can I say one thing real quickly?
No. Of course you can. Go ahead.
So I'm on stage with Tapestry Dance Company at the Rawlings Theater.
Love
this weekend.
Yes, this is our closing weekend.
Oh, awesome. What's
Passing
the show?
It Forward. Let me get it right. Passing it forward, taking one step at a time, a journey to present grace.
Awesome.
And Phenomenal. It's awesome.
Are you tapping?
No, I'm not a tapping.
So Tapestry Dance, I'm guessing it's tapestry.org.
Yes.
Yep.
Awesome. So go check that out if you'd like.
I also want to say Mouthful at St. Edward's University. Runs November 10th through the 20th. So that's not here yet, but it's coming up. Keep your eyes out for Mouthful.
Gotcha. Okay, so back in 1903, Daniel Frohman opened in the New Lyceum Theater on 45th Street with a show called The Proud Prince. Do y'all remember that one?
No, but nope. I think he's related to Abe Frohman, the Sausage King, of Chicago.
Possibly. But anyway, this was the new Lyceum Theater that was later called the Lyceum. It is the oldest continuously operating legitimate theater in New York City.
What year was that?
1903.
Wow.
Ooh. Amazing. Wow. Well, amazing and sad. Because, you know, there were theaters. We talked about all the Yiddish theaters on East 13th Street and all that area that had so many Yiddish theaters, and now all of them are gone. So it's sort of sad that only one remains from 1903.
Yeah.
In 1937, somebody named George M. Cohan starred in a Richard Rodgers and Lawrence Hart musical called I'd Rather Be Right.
He wrote that for us.
and Cohan played, and this breaks my heart, Cohan stars as a man he hates. Mm. FDR.
Oh.
Cohen hated FDR? That makes me sad.
Really?
I know. I didn't want to know that. So it ran for 9 months, and that's it. In 1950, George Bernard Shaw died.
Uh-huh. Was it really 1950?
It was 1950. Hmm. And 21 years later, in 1971. Now, this is interesting. This is Barbara Cook makes her final, so far, appearance in a Broadway book musical. In Truman Capote's The Grass Harp. So Barbara Cook has not been on Broadway in a musical since 1971.
Yeah. I did know it had been decades, but yeah, that's
it ran for 7 performances, poor thing. Bless her heart.
She's doing all right. That must be, maybe that's why she hasn't been back in a musical.
She's doing all right.
So also in 2006, that little crazy show that talked about the cat ladies, Edie, Little Edie and Edith Bouvier Beale. Opened at the Grey Gardens. So that was it. We're going to hear a little bit of that music on our way out. It got Tonys for Christine Ebersole.
Listen,
and Mary Louise
I love Wilson. Me some Grey Gardens. Don't even get me started on so many levels. I love me Grey Gardens.
I've never seen it.
Oh, it's good. Oh my God, you would love so it. Good. Beautiful music.
Yeah. You seen it?
No.
Oh, good. Yeah. I did want to make sure I wasn't alone. So, more of today's birthday, back in 1897, Dennis King, you remember him?
Yes.
Paul Ford. Ford, who invented the car in 1901. He didn't really.
I was about to say, why is the Ford card maker in the Broadway birthdays? But okay.
I made that up. Peggy Conklin and somebody named David Schwimmer in 1966.
David Schwimmer.
Locally, Mark Puhay today.
Mark Puhay.
Well, I'm doing a show with him, actually, in at the Vortex.
He rocks the party. What are you doing? What show?
We're doing Lisa Thompson's Underground.
Okay, you guys have to make sure you come
with Absolutely.
Yeah, and he's going to be in Present Laughter, my favorite Noel Coward piece.
He rocks the party. Yeah, Danny Herman also rocks the party.
Yes, Danny Herman.
Happy birthday.
And Ken McKenzie Grant, late of Co-op Radio.
Yes.
His birthday's tomorrow.
Mañana.
Also another co-op, Mr. Rush Evans.
Oh,
who
Rush.
Has Off the Beetle Path. His birthday's this Friday.
He is the singer in the song, too.
He does. Singer in the song. He's got two. Saturday, Craig McCurley.
Oh, wow. There's a lot of birthdays.
Of Parade fame and Little Shop of Horrors fame. And just recently, just closed Sweeney Todd. Craig Caney.
Craig's birthday, too?
Bryce Rafferty.
Oh, my goodness.
Who is a guitar player, works with Austin Theater Project. And Julie Wright. These are all birthdays that are happening on Saturday.
All on Saturday?
All on... Well, not all. The last
It's a lot of birthdays right now. Birthdays.
Bon anniversaire.
Bon anniversaire.
So let's go and listen to a little bit of Grey Gardens, and we'll come back.
Yes.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nick Squared.
Hello!
Nick Squared! Nicole Shiro and Nick Mayo. We've been talking to Zell Miller III, and now we're going to switch gears a little bit, and we have a pre-recorded interview that Nicole and I did.
Magic happen!
We had some magic to do.
We did.
Just for you.
Me and you.
We spoke to the trickster. That was his name, the trickster.
Yeah. Yes, Jeff Hobson.
From Jeff Hobson, from The Illusionists, which you didn't go see last night. I was supposed to go see last night.
No, Tracy went.
Tracy
he came out.
Schultz went to see it last night.
He was telling us all about The Illusionists.
The Illusionists. But we pre-recorded a interview with Jeff Hobson when he was here filming. Or taping.
He was here doing some press like a month ago.
Yeah, he was doing the Cactus Cafe.
Yes. Oh, that's right. Over at South Austin Brewery. Yeah. And we got to go.
So here's the deal. So we've got this interview that lasts about 5 minutes with him. And then if we have time on the broadcast, he actually did a radio card trick. Yes, and we'll do that separately. If we don't have time during this radio show, we're going to put it on the podcast. All right?
I like that idea.
So let's go ahead and listen to that interview right now. You're entering Rainbow. That's not it.
No, but you know what? We can enter Grey Gardens. I'll tell you again. What.
I do not like these new CD players. I'm just going to go on record to say that. Here we go. Here's the interview.
Okay.
We are here at the South Austin Brewery, and we are very, very, very lucky to be interviewing Jeff Hobson, who is the trickster in The Illusionist, straight from Broadway.
That's a great name. I love it. The trickster. It's cool.
Is that what it is?
Yes.
Oh, God.
Yes. Look at your notes.
Yeah, I did.
Yes.
I did.
It's the trickster. I was given that moniker because
all the performers have some sort of moniker, correct?
Right. The producer wanted us to be like the Avengers of magic, so he gave us little titles.
I don't know what that is. I do.
See.
See how it works.
See how that is.
So he's a wise guy.
Yeah. Yeah. So you are a comedic magician.
Yes, that's one of the terms, comedy magic, whatever you like to say. Basically, I perform comedy magic, so if people don't laugh, that's the magic.
Great. Say something funny. Okay. No.
That was it.
I know.
Ding, ding, ding. Time's up.
Actually, you know what? This is very timely that you are here, because I suddenly have gotten really into watching these magic shows. Penn and Teller Fool Us.
This is great.
Is it called The Illusionists?
No, it's called Masters of Illusion.
That's the one, yes.
So I've been
watching those, but here's the deal, because and Nicole will back me up on this. We are hard-hitting journalists.
Absolutely.
Here at Offstage.
I
on
doubt
the air.
That, but go ahead.
Not a lot of women in your profession.
No, you know, it's just, I think it's a thing that's like a guy thing when it's, you know, you get a magic kit, and moms and dads probably never think, ooh, let's give it to a girl, because throughout history, all the famous magicians have always been guys. So it's stigmatized for guys. However, it's been changing slowly over the past few years. We get more girls. I get more little girls coming up to me after a show and saying, I'm going to learn how to be a magician. I go, good, we need you. We'll give you 5 years. Come on and audition, you know? So, yeah.
So there are two companies of The Illusionists, are there not?
Actually, sometimes there's four.
Okay. Are there any women in any of those?
Yes. Matter of fact, my old partners, we used to have a production company together, Kaylin and Ginger. They're from Reno, Nevada. They are in the Illusionist, quote, turn of the century, unquote, that is going to be playing on Broadway this year. We played Broadway last 2 years, but now this new show is going to be playing this year. Yeah.
Lovely. Well, that's awesome. So that's our hard-hitting part. It's over. You've passed.
But now, Nicole, do you talk at all?
I do talk at all.
Yeah.
That's
fine.
You cannot get Nicole to shut up. That's why
I
keep
her away. Once you go, oh, thank God. Have some more beer.
Vaccinated with a phonograph needle, this one.
Oh, that's a... whose line is that? Groucho Marx. Thank you very much.
Well, I've got a slew of Groucho Marx.
Don't do them.
I'm not.
They're not good.
I started to.
Yes. Because Groucho Marx said they can't all be good.
No, they can't. And for me, it's a numbers game.
Real the odds, you mean?
Yeah, no. Yeah. You throw enough out there, something will
happen. Don't ever gamble.
I do.
No, I'm so sorry.
That's why I live in Austin.
Okay.
So tell us why you're here in Austin right now.
I'm here for the beer.
Excellent. Thank you.
No, I'm here because I'm spending time doing press for lovely people like you.
Excellent. Well, you're here talking about The Illusionist, the show that's coming to the Bass Concert Hall. Is that correct?
November 1st through 6th, you are correct.
Wow, you're good. You actually knew the dates.
Right. I actually mixed it up on an earlier interview. I thought I was in Atlanta, Georgia. Okay, never mind.
People get these two towns mixed up all the time.
It's basic.
Both capital cities.
See? Both capital A's.
I've been in both cities in the past month.
Oh, I've been in the past week, so there you go.
You win.
See?
So... you do comedic magic, as yes. We've already ascertained. Why comedic magic? Which came first? Was it
always the magic.
Was it the funny or the magic?
No, the magic, because, you know, serious magic is the first thing that you learn. And then I was always a class clown, and I always made jokes, got in trouble, had my hand slapped, and, you know, the whole bit when you could slap hands with a ruler. That's how old I am. And so now I realize as I get older that people love to laugh just as much or more so than being amazed by magic. And so I combined them both, and I've been doing it ever since I was 16.
Excellent. And for this piece, you are not only a performer and a magician, you're also the host?
That is sort of by default. Just because I'm...
Because you're the smartest?
Well, because, yes. Just a little bit smarter than you, but not much. Not much, I'm telling you.
Don't
doubt it. Okay. Ooh, ooh, wow. Get out the boxing gloves. So, yeah, I am on stage most in the show, and I do the segues between the acts, and I sort of, like, talk to the audience more than anyone else does. And so thus people go, oh, you're the MC, you're the host. Well, yeah, I suppose I am.
Excellent. The Illusionists... Mm-hmm. For the whole family, or is it just for us adults?
Well, no. Surprisingly, contrary to some of the graphics and the advertisements you may see on video, it looks pretty serious, daunting, suspenseful, dramatic, dangerous, and that's all there in the shows. But we call it a wonderful, wonderful spectacle of magic that kids can be brought to, and when they are, they just love the show.
Excellent. So I'm guessing we not only see illusion, we see some sleight of hand, tabletop-y kind of stuff.
Sure, tabletop-y kind of stuff. I never heard it that way, but it's called close-up. But that's, I'm going to say that from now on. Would you people like to see some tabletop-y type of magic? That's what I'm going to say.
And feel free to use it.
And I'm going to give you credit.
Excellent. So I've got one last question. Again, we're going to go back to the hard-hitting journalism. You were on Broadway with this show, correct?
Yes, twice.
You have your equity card?
No, we didn't need one.
Did you go under AGVA?
No.
Which union represented any?
Our own. We made our own union.
Hey, you're not smiling. You did?
Well, no, actually, that was... I'm trying to keep a straight face because I can't believe you actually bought it.
I believe
you. Did you see these people? Really? Oh, my God. Does New York know about this? Who knows? No. I have no idea. We just...
We just did it.
I don't know anything about unions.
Well, there you go. Mm. Jeff Hobson, thank you for being on offstage and on the air.
Is that it? Can we go another hour?
We can. Okay. You could actually come and be part of the show.
Well, doggone it. Come down to this show because it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to see the 7 of the greatest, thank you very much, magicians all at once on stage.
I know I'll be there.
I will too.
Where can folks get information about this show, Amy Layton?
BroadwayInAustin.com.
Or Austin.Broadway.com. Or you even have a different one.
BroadwayAcrossAmerica.com.
Shannon Bogus, do you have one? Call Shannon Bogus. Her number is 512.
Give her
thanks for being on the show.
We've got magic to do just for you. We've got miracle plays to play.
Oh, I thought I fixed that.
I thought I fixed that.
I went and re-recorded it and put the fade in, and I guess I didn't.
Well, you know
I was
what?
Just
you know.
Thinking about
it was,
Patina Miller's arms.
It was Patina
arms.
Miller, and she
There's
was
Patina
just doing
Miller's
it.
Arms. That was a fun interview.
That was a fun interview.
So here's the deal. You know what we're going to do? Those people that are going to listen to the podcast, and you should, you will get the opportunity as soon as this part ends and before backstage, you are going to hear the radio card trick.
Dun, dun, dun. It's actually pretty cool.
It's complete with the ta-da at the end.
Ta-da!
So you do not want to miss that.
Jumping in. You're not going to miss it because we're playing it right this very second. Here it is.
I can do this wonderful trick if you're listening closely because we will have Lisa and Nicole narrate what's about to happen and you'll hear the special effects as they happen. Pack of cards as I open the box. Ooh.
Wow.
And here is the pack of playing cards. No, that was not from the hummus earlier today. That was a pack of playing cards. I will do a fancy flourish. Aha, you can't duplicate that special effect.
No, but I want to know how to do that.
I know, isn't that cool? Look at it. Isn't that cool?
I can do that, actually.
Can you?
Well, it's called 52-card pickup.
Oh, no. Okay, first thing is to pick a card. A lot of magicians, first of all, do you like card tricks?
I love card tricks.
I hate card tricks, but I'm going to do this for you because you said that you like them.
I love them.
Look, here's a pack of cards. I don't really care. Take out one, and I don't care which one
and
it is.
And I do need to say that these cards are for people of my age.
They're senior citizen quality. Big pips. Gladys Knight could not be here. Just take one out.
Okay. All right. I'm going to take this one right here.
And it is a 5 of diamonds, and it's okay if I see it, because it's a lot easier for me when I know what it is.
Excellent. Yeah.
Take this Sharpie marker.
Sharpie marker.
I love it. Lisa, turn the card
I want
to
smell
both sides
the,
to make sure
smell
that
the Sharpie marker, and everyone's
car.
Happy. Who cares?
Okay.
Go ahead, sign your signature. First of all, leave room for Nicole.
I am.
Lisa on the top, Nicole on the bottom, and we're having a party. Okay.
There. I've just signed my name on the top.
Okay.
I'm going the opposite way.
Oh, she's opposite.
I'm mixing it up.
Okay.
Wonderful.
There you go.
Good. We will click the Sharpie away. And as you can see on the radio, there's two signatures. I'm actually holding the card near the microphone. But yes, everyone
Don't
else.
Don't laugh. They can see it.
At
My
the table.
Audience
at
is smart.
The table. Correct. Correct. A card, two signatures, Lisa and Nicole. They're there. Okay. Now, a lot of people say, if you're really good, why don't you let somebody shuffle the cards? I say, mind your own business.
Probably smart.
Because I can't do it. You look like you know about cards. Go ahead, Nicole. Take the pack. Take the cards. Shuffle. Just mixy. Just cut whatever. Now they're out of my hands. They're in Nicole's hands. She is now cutting the cards.
Really
no, it's
job,
all right. It's fine. Just as long as they're shuffled. Or shuffle, whatever shuffled. You want.
I will attest to Nicole is shuffling these cards.
Like a, you got to like be careful when you say that.
Yeah.
Like a minor.
Like
a, but they're happening.
Well, those people in those Indian casinos will poop their pants, those dealers, because you just did a wonderful job.
There
here it
go.
Is. I will now perform for you sleight of tongue. Listen carefully. I'm going to place the pack of cards inside my mouth, locate Lisa and Nicole's card, one of their signature, with my tongue inside my mouth. Fold the card three. Count them three times. Here it is.
Sounds nasty.
Okay, now please.
I don't know what to say.
I just licked the microphone. Now you guys have to narrate from now on because I can't speak.
Okay. Right. He can't speak because he's actually
is he really going to put the
really putting the
deck
entire
of cards deck of cards in his mouth.
Yeah, yeah. I saw this in a movie once, and he's doing it.
Okay.
Nobody ever says that.
He's going to try to talk with him.
Now listen. Is the top card your card?
Top card is not our card.
No, it is not.
Is the second to the top card your card?
No, it is not.
Is the bottom card your card?
No.
No.
Is not the top, not on the bottom. It must be somewhere in the middle.
Very good. Very good, Jeff. You're good.
Oh, you made a smiley face.
How
did you take all those cards?
He
out
just
of
took
your mouth
all the cards out,
mouth.
Left one in his teeth, and he's pulling it out. It's got tooth marks on it, and it also has the King of Clubs, which is not our card. Oh no!
He's
okay. Uh oh. Ooh! Another one
Wait
popped
a minute.
Out of
How
his mouth.
How did you just get that up from an?
I got it.
Yes.
And hold it. What? Why? Freak by.
Oh my gosh.
I'm not going to touch it. Could you take it out of my mouth?
Absolutely not. We will not touch
it.
It
is a folded card inside my mouth that I have not touched with my hands. Is this correct?
Correct.
That's correct.
I folded with my tongue. Thank you very much.
Yes, you did.
I'm going to get a lot of calls tonight.
You are.
In the middle of the night. Here we go.
In the middle of the night.
Here we go.
Now it's 512.
Yes. And here it is. The card is folded once. It's folded twice. It's folded three times. Is it your signatures?
It is indeed.
Yes, sir. There it is. Thank you very much, and
Yay.
Good night.
Yay!
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We are Facebooking live right now.
What?
So we've got the Facebook live thing going on right this very second.
Magic and illusions.
Yeah,
today.
And so I thought I'd give that a shot and see what happens. So we've got a few minutes to talk. We got like 2 minutes. What do you want to say?
Are we going to go back to more of our news, or are we just going to talk about anything?
Well, we can do whatever we want to. It's our radio show. As long as it pertains to theater, I'm okay.
Imagine
so
that.
So here's one thing I do want to say, and we alluded to the political environment at the beginning with our opening number with NPH. And I should say, and I will say this now, that the opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily the opinions of this radio station, the board of directors, or its employees. They are strictly my opinions, because clearly my opinion goes in one particular direction in the election. So, which is for Hillary Clinton. And that wasn't clear. Regardless of who you vote for, it's important for you to vote. It's not only your civic responsibility, it's your civic duty. In other countries, other people are not allowed to vote. So as we said at the end of the show last year, get off your ass and vote.
Yeah. Yes.
And don't wait.
Don't wait.
Don't wait.
It's silly to wait.
Be part
Zell,
of those
voted?
Record numbers
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. Of you pre-voters.
Zell, are you not going to vote?
I don't know yet.
You're going to vote. I'm telling you.
I'm thinking about it.
I'm going to take you.
I am going to channel your mother and say, Zell Miller III.
My mother never voted, though.
You will vote or I will put you over my knee.
I'm going to take you.
You of all people should know the importance of having of letting your voice be heard.
I do, absolutely.
If not for presidency, because in Texas your vote, well actually Texas this year your vote might count.
Yeah.
But down ballot and in our state house and locally,
we have a lot of local really elections going on that are 100%. Extremely important besides the presidential
election. Speaking of politics and theater, did you guys read about the New York Times ad that was pulled? Scott Rudin's Hello Dolly ad. That he had a picture of Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton facing each other in profile, and then at the bottom it says "It Takes a Woman,"
which is a song from
Hello Dolly.
Right.
The New York Times
said
pulled
no
it.
More.
Said it was because it was a paid
ad. So instead, it ended up being an ad for the humans. I found that interesting. I didn't see anything about it. I didn't think it was a picture of Hillary and Trump. I thought the only illusion was It Takes a Woman.
No, it was.
It was them.
It was a picture. And our theater community is jazzed up this election. And I mean, get out.
Jazz hands and all.
Jazz hands and all.
So anyway, you can early vote now, you should do it. So there are lots of ways to hear this show, not only on the air, but we podcast this on iTunes.
Yes, we do.
On Stitcher.
Yes,
on
we do.
On TuneIn.
Yep.
There are other ways to get it.
Or the website.
On the website.
That's where I go to listen to old archives.
And what's that site, Nick?
Offstageonair.com.
Don't ask the
You
new
are so
guy.
Fired. But if you
try to put you into it, and then you're like, I don't know, online.
Okay, if you go to offstageonair.com, you can put in your name. We'll send it to you every year.
Yeah, we'll just every year, every week.
Every week.
If you're, each week.
If you're listening, when did I lose control? If you're listening on the airwaves, stand by for Austin Monitor News. They are back. They're next, followed by Tracy Schultz in not remix today, but singer,
what's new
is today at whatever time that happens at 2:30. Oh my God, I'm so good. If you're listening to the podcast,
that would be the Tracy Schultz that went to the Illusionist we were alluding to earlier.
That will be the if you're listening to the podcast, stand by for Backstage at Offstage and the famous magic trick. And you know what? I should probably cue up the right thing so you don't listen to the magic trick right this very second. And we are going out with, when you vote, you got to do your duty because duty calls.
Duty calls, duty calls, and a man can't stick around when duty calls. Though your lover know your mother will be there to wash your small duty calls. Got the gun.
Well, the curtain has just come down on Peepers the Musical, the story of a hapless young glass manufacturer looking for love in the big city. Ended up falling down, going into the lens grinder, and making a spectacle of himself.
Yeah. Bum, bum, shh. You know what's funny is I was thinking about Peepers the Musical, but we were there together.
We were there together. Yay. Well, here we are backstage, and this is my favorite kind of backstage.
Just us.
Small and intimate. Just us and Zell Miller III. We have you all to ourselves.
Good.
So you've not been backstage before, have you?
I've never been backstage.
Awesome. Well, we're happy to have you here.
Thank
Be careful out here by the dumpsters. There's puddles.
Okay.
I can't guarantee what's in those puddles, so you might not want to stand in them. I'm just saying.
Very good.
This is it's a iffy neighborhood we live in, or the theater's in. what we like to do here backstage is talk to our guests, and we talk to you about your shows, but we don't know anything about you.
Okay.
So first of all, where are you from, Austin?
I am not originally from Austin. I was born in Mansfield, Ohio.
Did I ever leave Ohio?
I've been here since I was four.
Where's Mansfield?
I grew up here. Mansfield is
what's
about
it near?
60 miles outside of Columbus.
Columbus.
Oh,
okay.
I was wondering.
So who are you rooting for in the World Series?
Keep
this sportsy.
Listen.
There's really only one answer.
The Cubs.
You might as well say the Cubbies right
say
now.
Say the Cubbies.
I want to say the Cubs, but here's the thing. I was hired by Major League Baseball a year ago to do domestic violence training, and the Cleveland Indians was one of the teams that I was assigned to, and Francona is just amazing, and the team was amazing.
Who was Francona?
Francona, yeah.
Oh, Francona.
Yeah, the manager.
The manager.
Yeah.
I was Cleveland. Like,
I don't know anything about sports.
I was like,
but
it's Cleveland.
He was the manager. He welcomed us. He was like, hey, These guys are here for a very important reason. We need you to listen up. And awesome. He couldn't be in the room, but just the camaraderie and the brotherhood between them, and they were open to it. They shared personal stories.
Did you talk to them about changing them. The name of their darn
I did not get to talk to them about
the Cleveland. There's a good group of people that run the Cleveland yep. organization.
Absolutely. Yeah, they were amazing. They were amazing.
So you can be for Cleveland. Actually, it's a great.
Let me tell you, this has been drama and theater. I mean, we're already into seven games. Going to the seventh to figure it out,
it's going
to
be amazing.
I think it's awesome for both of
them. All my years of sports casting, I've never seen anything like that.
You know, you make it like you don't like sports, but you used to fly around on your plane and watch minor league baseball.
I did. And I used to watch. I used to walk to the Yankee Stadium. And,
oh, wow.
I would go to Wrigley a lot. So, and I believe I was there, and we're going to talk about us for a while.
Okay, that's fine.
I believe I was there, and you may have been there too, before they had the lights. I believe those lights were put in the late 90s or something. We'll get our fact checkers on that.
I don't remember. I remember lights, sure, but I don't think they're the same lights now that you say that.
No, I'm pretty sure they got lights when I was living in Chicago, and I moved to Chicago in 94. You moved away in 94.
I moved away in 94.
Okay, so I think you were there.
When the lights were being put in.
You know, no, I don't believe you ever knew lights at Wrigley.
I just know I was drunk and I
did. You know that Wrigley? So Zell Miller's got that quizzical.
No, no, no.
Look
I
on
thought
because
you start out by saying New York, so I was confused for a second.
But, yeah, I lived in both New York and Chicago.
We've been
but
in
yeah,
both.
No,
both.
I think
following each
I think
other
Wrigley
around.
Wrigley got lights in the 90s because it was a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. You left at four to go where?
To come here.
So you went right from Ohio to here.
You may as well have grown up here. What high school?
I mean,
did
I grew up
to?
Here. Yeah, I went to Reagan High School.
You went to Reagan.
Yeah, I went to Delby Middle School. I went to Barrington
Elementary.
You've
seen
a lot of
changes.
All of it.
All of it.
We have in 19, I think it was 1913, the city plan where they purposely put the drawing line, put all the people of color east of I-35.
Yes.
And then when I moved here, in 12 years ago, 13 years ago, there were still pretty much I-35 was the dividing line.
Yeah, I mentioned that a lot.
Yeah. So you lived through a lot of that.
I did, absolutely.
As a person of color.
Yes.
Did you live on the east of I-35?
Yes, I did. Yeah. I grew up in Springdale Gardens,
I guess
which
you
is
to.
Right around the corner from Sims Elementary, uh-huh. across the street from Givens Park.
All right.
And then we moved from Springdale Gardens we moved north to Dalham Drive, where I went to Barrington Elementary. And then my sister... that's when they did the busing. And so the fourth, fifth, and sixth stayed at Barrington. Third, second, and first got bused to Metz Elementary. So for a year, me and my sister could speak fluent Spanish.
Muy bien.
And it would just make my mom crazy. And now I can't remember anything.
I was like, do you remember any of it?
I don't remember any of it. But we would like have these conversations and it would make my mother just insane.
Because
she couldn't know what I was talking
she didn't
about.
Know what you grew up to.
At what point did you become an artist, and at what point did you become a theater artist?
I think I've always been an artist. I think a theater artist, if I'm being honest, probably at the age of three and a half, four. I could read at two and a half. So
well,
I was.
Who couldn't?
I was little peanut, weren't you?
Oh, I misunderstood you. I can read two and a half words now.
But in preschool, they wanted me to play the baby Jesus because I was the smallest kid.
Oh,
and I looked at the script and was like,
that
well,
was the requirement?
Yeah,
was
you know,
smallest?
I was the smallest. And so I was like, well, Joseph has 10 things he says. I want the 10 things. And so ever since then, I've been a line counter.
That's hilarious.
You know, there are no small actors, only small parts.
You want to be stuck in a manger.
So everything I know of your work is filters around theater, poetry, and social justice.
Mm-hmm.
Has it always been that?
No.
Or did you ever do like Carnival?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm not a singer.
Oklahoma.
I'm not a singer. I'm not a singer. So that's always kept me out of a lot of things.
That surprises
but,
me.
Yeah.
Because your voice is delicious.
I can't carry a note.
Delicious.
No,
and you're
can't
always
carry a note.
Surrounding yourself with creatives where there is music
absolutely.
And choreography and things.
I mean, I think there's a musicality in language, period. That's that's how I've always
true.
Heard it. In terms of, so I'm part of the, you know, I grew up in Capital City Playhouse. That was my home. And
I believe they did for Color Girls there.
They did for Color Girls there. Yeah, Boy Vance directed it.
I know, we talked about it.
And I'm excited because Sandra Parks, who was in it, who was an amazing actress, she's coming down to see Balladista Bullet on Saturday. So I'm very excited.
Oh, that is awesome.
But in terms of theater, my in sixth grade, I was writing my choice sheet, and my mother was like, well, what are you going to choose? And I want to choose journalism because my big brother Tony, who I idolized, was in journalism. She was like, no, she scratched it out. She's like, you need to do theater. One, you have a big mouth. Two, you have a great memory. And you need to be somewhere where you can let all this, whatever you do, out. And so I was very upset. And so I didn't get journalism. And so my theater teacher, Jerry Miller, this white guy who looked like George Carlin, he would call me his son, and I hated him, and I would do everything to try to get out of his class because I wanted to be in journalism. And he was like,
now, would he call you his son, or would he call you son?
No, he would call me his son. He would go, and my son is in the back, Zell, because I was just like cantankerous and just very rude, and I was sitting in the back. I wouldn't say nothing. I wouldn't do any assignments. I'm just give me an F. I don't want to be here. Give me study hall.
Oh my God.
And so he was like, I'm not going to let you out. And so, they were doing this weird play that he would do these offshoot plays. And so it was, one was a vampire, and I had a photographic memory before I had children. And so he would make me sit next to him.
I want
to
ask, but I'm not going to.
That was hilarious. I caught that. So, it was like that great line.
He would make me sit next to him when they would do these rehearsals, and I would be like, that's not your line. You're supposed to move over there, you know? No. And so he finally, so the kid got sick, and he was like, hey, listen, here's the deal. If you step in and do this play, do this role, I promise you I will let you out. I will try to help you get into whatever elective you want to be in. Bet. Did the thing, and the eighth grade girls thought I was cute, which meant the eighth grade boys wanted to be my friend now, which meant the seventh grade girls got jealous, happened. And then my seventh grade friends were like, oh. And I was like, oh, you know, this is
the thing, might.
This is kind of cool. Like, girls are kissing me and stuff. So maybe I'll stay one more year.
And then it just kept going.
And then the kid, they were doing A Raisin the Sun at Capital City Playhouse. Mm-hmm. And a young man got sick, got chicken pox, and they needed
Cap
they needed
City
a Travis.
Was on State Street. Is that right?
Yeah. It's the Fado, Irish Fado.
Oh, that's
thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Was that Miguel Zarate? Is he the one that?
Michelle Uroski.
No, Miguel Zarate.
I don't know who that is.
Okay.
No, but those names were very similar, though. Michelle
Uroski ran Cap City Playhouse. Okay. Tragically, he had a heart attack the day they closed the doors, which was, it was his heart and soul.
Yeah.
He was a beautiful man. And he, so anyway, they needed Travis, and they came to Dolby, where I was going to school. They talked to my theater teacher, Mr. Miller, who called my mother, and they didn't tell me. They just, you know, it was a Sunday, and my mom was like, you need to come in and take a shower. I'm like, yo, we're playing football. What are you talking about? So they came to audition me at the house. They liked it, and then they wanted me to come down to an audition. And again, I had a photographic memory, so I had already memorized the script. So when I walked into the rehearsal, the audition, like all these other little guys had their script or whatever. I'm just sitting there, you know, chilling. And it said in there, Travis jumps into his father's hands after he gives him the 50 cent piece. No other kid had did it up until that point. And, you know, I was a rule follower. So I did it.
I don't see that in
Mark,
you, but okay.
Mark Raymond was director, and he was like, yes, tell everybody else to go home. So
awesome.
Yeah.
And the rest is
it.
Absolutely. That's awesome.
That is awesome. And so you have kids.
I do. I have a 17.
You want to shout out to your kids?
Yes, I would love to shout out. I have a 17-year-old son named Zell Miller IV. What up, Zelly? And I have a 8, soon-to-be 9-year-old daughter named Blaze Marley Miller, who is soon to be taking my spot as a theater person.
Mazel
she
time.
Is
the
most
I was about to say either
dramatic,
one of them into it.
Sensitive, she emotional, on point. She can cry on command and do everything. And she does
that
things
can be good
like.
And bad.
Oh, absolutely. She does things like, Dad, tell me to be sad. And I'm like, be sad, Blaze. And she'll go, okay, wait. Okay, let me do it again. Daddy, tell me to be sad. You know, like the whole thing. Daddy, tell me to be, you know, the whole thing. So it's draining, but it's amazing.
That's cool.
Well, Zell Miller, thank you for
Absolutely.
Joining us.
Thank you.
Or I guess, do you, so I want to say Zell Miller, but is it Zell Miller the third?
It's
do
Zell
I call
Miller
you?
Third. Absolutely.
Zell Miller the third.
Yes.
Thank you
thank
for
you.
Joining us backstage.
It's awesome.
You're welcome back here.
Yeah, I know.
And it doesn't smell too bad back here. This
it
is
gets
good.
Better. You just get used to it. It still smells bad. Thanks for being on the
thank
show.
You.
We'll see you next time.
Absolutely.
Bye-bye.
That happy sound rolls over you.